As of yesterday, it is official. Hillary Clinton is the first woman to get the nomination of a major party to run for president. Quite a few people may be thinking, what took so long? Which is a good question for raising the numbers of women in politics overall. The Senate has the most women ever, 20 out of 100. Oregon is in the top 10 of states for numbers of women in the legislature at 31%. So, since women are half the population, even slightly more than half, there's a lag in elective office. Today's guest has worked for years to catch up. Kathy Allen has worked for a long time to get women elected to office in several countries. For the National Women's Political Caucus, she is Vice President of Education and Training, and over several decades has helped recruit, train, and elect women in 49 countries around the world. Kathy's also the founder and owner of the Connections Group based in Seattle, helping women get elected, usually Democrats. She's also the author of 4 books on campaigns and a frequent visitor on TV and radio news programs. Kathy Allen, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I think this is your third time here.
It sure is.
All right. Well, welcome back.
Well, I was sitting here thinking I should probably get up first and get some lemonade, given the incredible hotness it's going to be all over the West Coast, but it's hot in many ways. So I got to say that this is a great kind of introduction for talking about women today after last night's extravaganza.
Let's get a hit from you then, because we spent the segment previous to this, our Vince Day segment, getting opinions from people about candidates and platforms and politics and parties, and just wanted to know what your view of where things stand at the moment is.
Well, things are good and getting better. I have to say that I've long thought that it would be a great day if all the different countries I've worked in, it might be nice to work in my own country and have a woman president, given the fact that we have now 30 different countries that have women presidents. And so, and it's sort of like been a great year in seeing so many new women actually make it to the top in other countries. I mean, obviously, taking a look at what's going on right now in Britain, Scotland, Ireland, even just recently Mongolia increased the number of women in its parliament by 10%. So here in the States, I'm like, oh, gosh, isn't this great? So I was feeling pretty good. Watched the shows and everything last night, and I must say, as part of the Hillary movement, I was pretty well emotionally involved last night.
So what is the major obstacle? I mean, you've cited a couple of countries, particularly Mongolia, I would think, which is probably a very patriarchal society, and yet they've got they've increased the women in their representative bodies. Why are we so unable, it seems, to get to 50% of women as they are 50% of the population?
Well, I think that no one gives up power. That's the one thing about this, Jeff, is that, you know, if you have power, in fact, I just got back from Morocco, and the guys there are like, you know, we've had these women, we love having them in parliament, but I don't want them to take my seat. In all of this, what happens is that if you've got power, if you've been there taking a look at resources and programs and who's going to get jobs, it's hard to say, oh, why don't you give it to somebody else? Oh, how about these women? Nobody gives up power. Power is taken.
So it seems like part of the issue, though, is that it's not just a matter of people not willingly giving up their seats, and I guess I don't blame them for that, but it seems like the proportions of women who run for office are still relatively pale by comparison to men.
Actually, what's happening is we're seeing this year a record crop, not just here, but all over the world. The fact is that most of the information that you get about what's going on in regards to women and political participation is around the presidential race. However, very few have figured out that right now we have not only the largest number of women running for the United States Senate and House, but the fact is that right now that pivotal change of whether or not a Democratic woman president gets a Democratic and increased women United States Senate is very much in play. There's 5 women right now who are ahead in their races that would replace 5 Republican men in the United States Senate. We need 4 to be able to have the president have a ruling Senate in her own party.
You have worked with some Republicans. I want to make that clear to some of our listeners.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
In fact, Lisa Murkowski was one of them, wasn't she?
She sure was. Mm-hmm. And actually, I would say that there's been a number of women that and men. If they're the best, what we know in this world of helping women, that, you know, you never vote for someone who's not the best. If you are looking at a candidate who's a guy that's terrific, you vote for the guy. In all of it, what I have found, however, is that if there's a woman running, you know, she usually is pretty much the best. And that's because her styles of leadership are different. And actually, for viewers and listeners, you should know that working in terms of as a woman is also just, it's not just that she's a woman and has, you know, chromosomes that point to her being a woman. The fact is that there's a real style difference between how women run things and how men run things. Basic things that you probably would figure out yourself, like women tend to ask a lot of questions. Women tend to be more inclusive. Women tend to actually challenge the status quo. Like, why are we doing this? Because we've always done it? Why is that so important? Other things like women tend to be particularly the kinds of folks that young people sort of like to listen to, because young people like women are not status quo, and they kind of feel a commonality there. Women also are the kinds of folks that you end up, you know, seeing, because they tend to not just put things in cute little packages. Women tend to say, well, look, this problem with crime is not just a matter of giving the police more money. It's a matter of homelessness. It's a matter of our drug problem and health care. It's a matter of people not having jobs. Women see the interconnectedness of things. And women are just much more cooperative. We are much more win-win as opposed to I win, you lose. We are far more into being collaborative, and that's what's making this year so special. People all over the world are just totally fed up with everything that's going on in politics, and as a result, they figure that women at least don't want to get into little silos and stay there. They're much more likely to cross the aisle. And they're much more likely to actually listen to other folks to actually get something done.
Much more to talk about with Kathy Allen, who has helped women get elected to office in 49 countries all over the world, including this one. Hundreds, in fact, of races to talk about with her that she's worked on in the past, and then lots to talk about with what's going on with getting women elected in this year. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll provide the phone number and email address again right after this break. We'll go to the break and come back and talk more with Kathy Allen and you in a minute 25. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today with Kathy Allen for the third time. She knows a lot about getting women elected to office all around the world. She's worked in 49 different countries. She is the Vice President of Education and Training at the National Women's Political Caucus, the founder and owner of her own company, The Connections Group, based in Seattle, the author of four books on campaigns, and a frequent commentator on TV and radio programs. And what do you know? Here she is on this one today. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the issues of getting more women elected to political office, perhaps eventually in proportion to how they are in the population, because it's not close at this point. 800-838-3760 for your phone calls. Your emails go to jx@jeffnet.org. I want to come up down this trail of styles of leadership that you were just mentioning, how women are different in positions of leadership, which is not unsurprising, of course. But then what are the expectations that voters have of women as candidates, though? It seems like the kinds of things that a man would say and get away with in a political campaign, a woman can't be without getting branded as strident or worse.
Very true. Very true. In fact, the number one concern that is mentioned about people talking about Hillary is they can't stand her voice, that she's always sounding shrill and she's always sounding like she's like your mom yelling at you. The fact is that her clothes become comment number one and her hair comment number two. All of these things become part of what we know. I mean, ironically, it's not you guys that are sitting there and saying, you know, I was really nervous about her hair last night. It really looked messy. The fact is, it's women particularly that usually pick up first a little bit about her style, her hair, how she looks. Those are the kinds of things that what we're trying to do is raise the conversation so that women are engaged in the kinds of issues that, you know, women like to hear about.
This reminds me, having had a background in TV news, of the kinds of things that happened to some of the first women on the air. They were heavily criticized. I mean, men look the same every day. Their hair is short. They got a tie on. They got a jacket on, etc. Women can look many different ways, and people take note of this and complain about that. So it sounds like a very similar kind of thing, with a lot of the complaints, again, coming from women rather than men.
It's really a situation that stems from how the media portrays women. I have to say that I've talked to over 30 different national and local women weather people who are doing the weather on the news hour. And what happens is that they say the same thing. Well, people never call and discuss the comments about the weather, which they do with men weather people. And then what happens is that you will find in a lot of these cases the women say, well, you know, that cleavage of yours was too low, or, you know, I don't like the color of that. It kind of clashes with the map behind you that they always talk about. The colors, the style, the clothes, the hair, whatever.
So the guys get, like, you really nailed it on the barometric pressure, and the women get, geez, that the blouse and the skirt don't go together.
Absolutely.
Yowza. So, I mean, do you work with that? Do you work around that? Or do you get the women all to dress in suits and ties like the men? What's the answer there?
I'll tell you what we try to do, and this is controversy for many wonderful women who are independent of soul and mind. What happens is that we end up saying, look, what you want is the folks to be able to concentrate on what you're saying. You want to be able to talk about the issues that would make their life better, the kinds of things that you're willing to do, you want to do, instead of they're saying, you know, I just don't like the sound of your voice, or I really don't like that hair. So we do preach a bunch about conformity. What that means is that when you're going in front of a TV, if you're going to be in a debate, don't make the clothes louder than your conversation. Don't make the earrings dazzling and sparkly. Don't make the hair all frou-frou. Make it simple. Make it something that people can actually manage to just assimilate, and then they won't be distracted by anything you're physically wearing. What they'll do is concentrate on what you're saying.
So, we need to talk a little more about Hillary Clinton. Obviously, she's now the first major party presidential candidate officially. Have your view of Hillary's chances fluctuated this year?
No, actually, I think that what's happening is this world movement of which I speak. This whole idea that right now people have reached such a point of frustration. It's the whole the kind of epic you see in regards to Donald Trump. It gave rise to Donald Trump. He is the extreme of what people look at as their frustration with status quo government, how we do things, the sense that the little guy doesn't matter, the rich are getting richer, the sort of the feeling of not having any power in a system that's too big for me to have any impact upon. Well, women arrive on the scene, and they are new. They're different. They're refreshing in terms of what they want to talk about. They're very much into, well, what's going to make a difference in your life? People see women as candidates that at least deal with the individual lives. They deal with what's going to make your life better. Things like education and health care and those kinds of things that make for my life getting better, my kids' life getting better. People believe that in women. People are also tired of the silo politics where nobody crosses lines, and if you've got a majority, forget about anything that a minority candidate could do. All of these things become part of the frustration that I think put a lot of these new women up to be running, and a number of different things that are happening so women are winning particularly strongly this year. It's not just America that's feeling this. Right now, the final candidates for Secretary General of the United Nations are women. The fact is that we've seen a record number of women become presidents this year in other countries. I think that this is international frustration with the fact that things are not getting safer, they're not getting better, and I'm still paying more.
Kathy Allen is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about women in politics. She has extensive experience trying to get them elected to office in many countries around the world. Well, when you talk about women not wanting to stay in the silos and not wanting to cross party lines and work collaboratively, I mean, they're still in some cases blocked by party leadership. Certainly that's the case in the U.S. Congress, where men still hold the key positions. But, for example, you've got a House Speaker in the Oregon legislature in Tina Kotek, who gets the same sort of criticism from the minority party, the Republicans, that she too holds an iron fist over the agenda and only lets Democratic bills to the floor, et cetera, et cetera.
That doesn't mean that just because she's a woman, she's going to actually be using all of the styles that are traditionally women. I do know many guys who have immediately said, well, wait a minute, I'm going to do all these things. I'm going to use this, you know, leadership of the styles of women. That's going to be my mantra. That's how I'm going to lead. And that's pretty well what we see in a lot of guys who win, is that they decide to be more collaborative, more listening. When it comes to women, we have this, the entire strategy is not about how is it you get elected as a woman so that you can lead like a man. For the actual women's movement we're working with, this is all about being elected as a woman and using those leadership styles, which we find intrinsic in women, much more collaborative and, if you will, democratic.
Do you tend then to work with women who are more willing then to work with a woman's leadership style as opposed to just trying to be like one of the guys? I mean, my mind keeps snapping back to Senator Joni Ernst in Iowa and talking about how she could castrate a hog with the best of them, which is kind of guy talk.
It is, but I have to say that was much more about just a media kind of, I think, inclusion of exactly what would separate her from her opponent. I have to say that really we do. We do just that. It's not just that we want you to go get elected and be there. The idea is you're supposed to be bringing a lot of these values that we find sorely missing in the elected leadership of today. The idea of listening, the idea of being able to take a look at bottom-up kinds of strategies to get policy changes that reflect our times. Taking a look at the exact efforts that now exist in regards to taking a look at police enforcement, particularly with minority communities. The idea is that that's a movement from the ground up, where people are starting to listen to what is it we can do so that both sides are working much more collaboratively, that we have an ability to talk and listen to each other. These are things that are not rocket science, but they are endemic ways of women's leadership.
They're not rocket science, but they're counter to what the current political trend is. I mean, listening to each other, particularly across party lines, is seen as a sign of weakness within the party. And even the party faithful, particularly among Tea Party Republicans, you're going to end up with a challenger on your right if you cross the lines in some cases.
That's true. However, what we're betting on is that when people see what happens when you get more work done as opposed to just holding the line against another party, we're betting that this becomes something that is going to be the new trend line. Get things done. Get back in terms of talking. The whole idea with strong parties, which, by the way, is something that we spend a whole lot of time, energy, and money trying to export to the rest of the world. When that happens, people turn around and say, okay, well, if you think party leadership is the way to go and that's how you build democracies, well, all right, we'll listen to it. But then what happens is you see the American model as it has evolved, where they become sort of their own leaders, their own kind of inside structure. The power becomes so entrenched that what happens is your parties get stronger and stronger so that you can't change to reflect the changing times. There's problems with this, and I'm the first to admit that when I'm in other countries and they say, well, your PAC system, that's the most corrupt system of all, I have to agree with them. I have to say that democracy doesn't always have the right answers. It is a very confusing process. It just happens to be the best one that I've seen.
Well, so when we get into things like trying to make sure that the party structures don't overwhelm the people who support them, then is for example, what the Tea Party has done a good thing for the Republican Party in the sense that the people who are voting are exerting more influence over the party?
It's hard to say. I would say that, again, it becomes subjected to the all power corrupts syndrome, which is once you have the actual power, do you use it in the way that it was intended and the way you talked about? Or do you go in and just say, well, that's my way or the highway. Give me a break. It's like, you know, to me, there are many cases of people getting power and then forgetting whence they came.
Kathy Allen's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a political consultant and campaign runner, has worked for women in 49 countries all over the world. You can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about political power and how to put it in the hands of women. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Wolfgang in Sunny Valley. Thanks for waiting.
Good morning. It's of course, an endless subject, and I could ask a million questions. Not a million. I'm exaggerating.
100,000.
It's the content. You were talking, where you were the public, if you look at what the public spends most energy and time with in terms of watching TV, for example, it is the earrings. It is the cleavages. It isn't the mental linear information. Now, I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but it addresses something. So, if we're listening to Clinton's shrill voice, or if strident voice, or what she doesn't wear, or blue, isn't there some degree of justification for people to react, gut level reaction? That's one of the issues that I was thinking of during the podcast so far.
All right, thanks, Wolfgang. Thoughts, Kathy?
Well said. I have to say that it's true. I think that he's got a good point, and what happens is that we've been accustomed to actually seeing what's going on through the eyes of more biasness. In fact, I would be, so as a former journalist, I was a reporter for the New York Times, among others. What I would say is that, you know, it's true that what we see with the decline of journalism as we know it, the fact is that people tend to look at the news through their own silos. It's sort of like if you are a good Democrat, you're listening to National Public Radio, shows like this, Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. And if you are from a Republican persuasion, you're listening to Fox, you're listening to much more conservative news. I look at it and think, wow, time was when you would want to hear all sides, and that doesn't necessarily happen. The second phenomena that I'm finding, particularly as it relates to women and increasing the actual number of women in powerful positions, is time. What's happened is that women's time, just like your time as a guy, is that we've all been subject to this quiet revolution of cell phones, emails, and so on, to the point that we have so much less time to be able to focus on all objective information. The truth is that when it comes down to women, we now are the biggest question I usually get from people when I say, why don't you run for office? They say, and Catherine, where am I going to find the time for that? Where? And I have to say, well, you know, some things are going to have to go if you want to run for office. And they'll say, that's exactly the point. I'm already involved in this. I can't get out of this. I got a full-time job. It pays me well. I got two kids. They go through exactly what it takes to be able to be today's woman and trying to hold down 3 to 4 different major roles in life.
Well, that raises the question whether it is, in fact, harder for women to run for office than men, because more is expected of women in the home and the child raising and the ferrying kids to school and soccer camp and all that stuff.
Yep. Time was, in fact, not so long ago on this very show, we talked about why is it that we're having a hard time getting more women running. That was 6 years ago. Well, in taking a look at what's happening today, the fact is that right now, people don't tell me, I don't want to run for office because I get to sit on the phone and call and ask people for money. Believe it or not, the number one thing they ask me is, am I really going to have time to do this? I don't think so. That people don't believe that they have the kind of flexibility in their life to be able to jump shift to something as brand new as running for office. And so what I'm seeing is that this whole thing regarding a woman has now taken on so many different jobs and roles that what's happened is that it limits the amount of time she has for civic engagement.
All right, question along those lines, I think, from Mark in Reading. Welcome to the Exchange with Kathy Allen.
Morning.
Hi.
Do women candidates and or office holders tend to be less responsive to their donors than our men? Men over time tend to do exactly what their donors tell them to do?
They tend to be absolutely far less willing to listen to the actual direction of their donors. The sad part is that they overcompensate. My feeling has always been, look, you know, nobody pays you to actually take a position. They may think that they're buying access, but no one has that right or authority. And frankly, the models we have of today's women show that women are very independent. I more often find that if someone's given you a contribution, you're more apt to listen to all sides and decide against the donor because you want to show that you're not beholden to anyone. Women live in the fear of being a puppet of someone, and donors particularly. So from that perspective, I have found more women who, while they may wince at having to vote against one of their donors, they're not unwilling to do so.
So to come back to your earlier comment about the people saying they thought the PAC system was one of the worst things in politics in the world, and you agreeing, I mean, what do we do about money in politics? What are the things that you see that could happen in the next couple of years to change the system as it exists now?
Well, there's no doubt that the Citizens United ruling by the United States Supreme Court actually put independent expenditures on the world mark as the most corrupt-looking kind of buying political action. And so I would say find yourself a great, perhaps, woman president that will make sure that our Supreme Court doesn't have that kind of sentimentality. That might be a help.
All right. We're talking to Kathy Allen about women in politics and getting more women into positions of political power, which is a bit of a trick, even though she has helped more than 660 women run all around the world. Back on the Jefferson Exchange to talk more about the subject matter with Kathy Allen. We'll take more phone calls and emails from you when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Kathy Allen. She has been helping women get elected in many dozens of countries around the world to political office. She is the Vice President of Education and Training at the National Women's Political Caucus, president of her own company, the Connections Group in Seattle, and the co-founder of the Center for Women and Democracy. You can join us on the Exchange as we talk about women in politics and political office. 800-838-3760 to join by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. I want to come back specifically to Hillary Clinton for just a moment, because I do remember from 2 years ago you talking about looking for people who are genuine. And that seems to be one of her major weaknesses, that people don't think she's genuine, don't think she's truthful. How would you, if you are, and I don't know that you aren't advising her, how would you advise her to go around that?
I have been, and as a matter of fact, what we've been talking about from the very beginning is for her to be able to be herself. So much of what I know about her comes from personal experience, in terms of I've had an opportunity to work with her a lot, as it might relate to when she was Secretary of State, particularly in working to spread this energy we have for electing more women worldwide. In that regard, you know, no one is just more of a great person to work with, and I know that personally. It's a probable cop-out for me to say that I think that so much of this is seen through the eyes of how we view women as a whole. The fact is that when women get powerful positions, they are definitely more scrutinized. They're definitely more people are more critical of those. And I don't say that as a slam at guys, because the people that are doing a lot of the criticizing, most of the criticizing, are not the guys in power, but rather the women who are always kind of nitpicking at women and seeing in her, well, what she got that I haven't got. The fact is there's an awful lot of inner competitiveness that goes on amongst women. From that perspective, I believe that there's a whole lot more genuineness you see in her. And actually, after last night, I must admit, in seeing, I wasn't necessarily enthusiastic about having Hillary portrayed through the eyes of Bill Clinton. But what happened is that he did give a very human side. The best of the Bill Clinton story man came out. And when he did that, I think people started to see her as a real person, as opposed to someone that is at the other end of a microphone talking about things like world democracies and problems with Iran and whatever it is. The fact is that we don't necessarily see her as the woman she is. We see the actual professional. From that perspective, I think you'll see more of her as the woman, the mother, and like the real person.
So the flip the scope around now on Donald Trump, I mean, he would represent a formidable opponent, I think, for anybody, just in that he can be very elusive. I mean, a lot of things don't stick to Trump because he just brushes on past the last mistake or thing that doesn't appear to be true on face value and on to the next.
Very true. In fact, I often, as a former reporter, will look at him and say, now, where did he get that information? Because you always wonder, in terms of some of these pronouncements, he just thinks that if he says it, it will be true. And what I found in just people who listen to him, it's not what he says. It is the confident kind of know-it-all, I'm in charge, don't worry about anything, I'll take care of it. It's that actual illusion of power already that make people kind of gravitate to him as somebody they can trust. The problem with women throughout the world has been that they tend, when they are speaking, to be honest. Like, I don't know everything there is to know about that. Or they tend to say, well, you know, I'm not sure about that answer. And what happens is that they look tentative, and in many cases, there's not that sense of overconfidence with which you see Donald Trump every day.
For the people who you're probably working with, lots of them, working down the ballot then, how unpredictable does what's going on at the top of the ticket make the election year for everybody else?
We're now starting to see, and even that I'm quite unsure about. I'm looking at this from the point of view of the number of women poised all over this country to run, including your own Oregon. And I want to say that obviously in taking a look at it, California, Washington, and Oregon are among the best of the best when it comes to having had a history of more women in the actual political queues. And we are now leading in terms of the rest of the country when it comes to what women's political involvement means. We now are seeing the actual years of what it means in terms of their policies and their actual credibility. Oregon, no slacker, particularly now where you have so many women. The interesting thing to me is that what we're seeing worldwide is the beginnings of a trend. In fact, right now, where America has 20% women in its political queues, the world's got 24.5, and we are heading up to 30% within a year, in my opinion. The fact is the world is outpacing the states in regards to women's political leadership. You're going to see more of that happening. It's not just about us and Hillary. This is a worldwide phenomenon of at least she could do no worse than the actual stalemates, partisanship, and rich getting richer that I see happening now.
And if people are wondering about some of the numbers, I mentioned at the top of the broadcast that Oregon actually was in the top 10 for percentage of women in the legislature at 31.1%. The states.
Yeah, we're in 33% right now up here in Washington State, but don't worry about that. You'll catch up.
Ooh, that was a glove throw, wasn't it? Colorado, 42%. Vermont, 41% are the top ones. So nobody's at 50%, which I guess is not surprising given given the general state of political stuff in the world.
No, but there are three countries that now have gotten over 50%, and the number one in the world is Rwanda.
Really?
Yeah, 60%, over 60%. And what happened is that they made a quota saying, okay, at least 40%. Of our population have to be, 40% of parliament have to be women. And after that happened, the people loved what they saw, that the women did things like they changed things around so that instead of putting two-thirds of the budget to the police, what they ended up doing is they took the money away from the police, in those countries, what was very corrupt police. And what they did is they put it into cleaning up their putrid waters so that the children weren't dying. And as a result, in 10 years, they changed the actual birth rate so that 4 out of 5 kids weren't dying at birth. Indeed, 90% were living. So little things like that are the kinds of things I expect that when women get to a certain, they don't even have to be majority. I would say in your state legislature and in mine and in California, what we see is that we all three are over, way over 20%. And so as soon as you get to about 22 to 25%, there seems to be a tipping point where women matter in a body and they actually get to perpetrate the kinds of policies that the rest of us say, well, what took them so long? That's a good idea.
Let's take a call here from Scott in Shasta Valley. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Kathy Allen. Scott, you there?
Am I on?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is that me? Hi. I have a twofold question. Number one, what I'm listening to me, seems like discrimination by definition.
Mm-hmm.
She's advocating voting for women because of her gender. And so my next question is, should not that woman's record, honesty, truth, should that not take priority over her body part?
Okay. Let's get a response.
If that makes part.
All right.
Now, that's good. That makes sense. I would say that, first of all, as I said before, that, you know, no one should vote for a woman just because she's a woman. You should always vote for whom you think is best. And you should always vote for someone who you've had a chance to actually kind of weigh the pros and cons thereof. I'm not advocating for just voting for every woman. It's just been my experience that when there's been a woman on the ticket, that's been the best person. What I also say is that when, to your, I would say, comment in regards to shouldn't we be caring about whether or not a woman's honest? Well, now that's a very good and interesting point. Do you know in focus groups that we have done in over 30 countries, the number one issue that people ascribe to women is honesty, that they are the ones that actually will stand up for what's honest. They'll actually bring up things they believe to be corrupt or inappropriate that government's doing. They are very much for open government, more transparency. They are the ones that say, why don't we open this up and have more public involvement? The fact is that we find that the reason for voting for women is not only do they have the perception of being honest, they are honest. Little things, like if you take a look at all of the 210 different terrorist attacks this year, not one had a woman involved. Little things, like if you take a look at the people who were prosecuted for political crimes all over the world last year, none were women. The fact is people do look at women and figure that, well, at least, you know, she seems to be more honest.
So you're talking about trying to get people involved in politics on the running for office side. There's also this effort to get new people interested in politics on the voting side. I mean, a lot of young people got really stoked up this year by Bernie Sanders. I notice almost nobody ever refers to him by his last name anymore. It is Bernie Sanders. But do you think people will stick around now that Bernie is no longer in line for the Democratic nomination?
Well, I do, and we have different kinds of jurisdictions here because you and I are both in states, you in Oregon, me in Washington, where we have the ability, all of us, to vote by mail. And that has turned out to be the number one boost for young voters voting. In Washington, we're now up to like 57 to 60% of the eligible voters, the young people voting. The fact is that 60%, and in a lot of other states, they get 17 to 24% of the young voters that are registered. The fact here in Washington and Oregon is that we get in the 50s. And so it's a matter of establishing voter turnout for young people that's going to be commensurate with what the trend lines are for the future. If we have 4 or 5 years where the number of young people voting is in the 60s and 70%, you know what? They're going to stay better voters for a while.
Did it give you a bit of a thrill a couple of weeks ago when Bernie, while not actually conceding and endorsing at that point, did urge people to run for offices at all levels?
Yes. It did. I was very, very heartened by that. And I actually can say that what we're starting to see, and what I think would be very good for the system, is a whole lot more young voters. The fact is that folks that are under 35 have a whole lot more going for them than I did when I was under 35. They are among the most educated. They're definitely much more technically savvy. They are much more tolerant. They are the kind of people who look for inclusivity. They definitely know their way around the world. They're much more global, more environmental, more, I would say, even looking for solutions as opposed to looking for wars.
I keep seeing comments from people, though, who are thinking third party. You know, they can't bring themselves to vote for Hillary. They wouldn't vote for Trump. They liked Bernie, so they're thinking either Jill Stein or Gary Johnson now. More Jill Stein, I think, I hear from the Green Party, which gets to the larger issue, which is what I think annoys a lot of people getting into politics for the first time, this constant binary nature. Well, it's Democratic or Republican. It's chocolate or vanilla. It's salt or pepper. You know, you don't get more than two choices.
I went through that myself. I went through that, and every once in a while I'll be in another country and someone will say, well, why don't we just have a woman's party? And I'm like, oh boy, been there, done that. Got to say that when it comes to what we've done, again, the evolution of the parties that we have really has made it pretty tough to be able to move any third or fourth or fifth party. I know Jill. I've met Gary. I got to say that these are great people that could be competitive in the Democratic and Republican parties. It's the system we have. And so creating a new system is very unlikely to result in a change. My feeling is the only way you change is within the party itself and open it up, similar to what you see happening with the Democratic Party, and who knows what's going to happen next after Trump in the Republican Party.
What, without predictions about actual individual races, I mean, do you see that by the end of this year we'll have more women having gotten elected to state legislatures, and do you work below that level? Do you work for county commissioner, county supervisor positions, all that sort of thing?
Absolutely. You know, I got to tell you, the goddess knows of all politics that I have been trying forever to get more wonderful women into Jackson County, among others. Medford, all of these wonderful places down there, I keep running through and saying, oh, come on, we've got to get some more of these women running, because you just haven't been up to snuff when it comes to actually getting your percentage of what should be there.
All right. Do you have any? I didn't see that you have any session coming up in Medford anytime soon. You're not coming down here, are you?
I know. I've just been there. I just been there earlier this year, and frankly, I'm hoping that we will get there before the end of the year. You bet. We're getting ready for next year's elections too.
Kathy Allen is with the National Women's Political Caucus, the Connections Group in Seattle, and always working to help women get elected to office. Always good to talk to you, Kathy.
You too. Thank you.
All right. Take care.